で。
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. And right now I'm alone, but Tommaso Vincenzo Giuseppe Bombasuto should be here in maybe 10 minutes. He's running late because he couldn't get his car right away. So anyway, I'm here, and tonight is an open show. Our listeners become our guests. They get to get they determine what we're going to talk about tonight. They get to call in 410-922-6680 and ask any question on personal finance they like, whether it's insurance or investments or estate planning or elder care, IRAs, 401ks. If it has to do with your personal finance, we'll deal with it and help you out there and give you some advice as to what we think, you know, or some tactics to take, some strategies to implement. And you can call and ask your question at 410-922-6680. It is an open show tonight, and you become the guest. You get to direct the conversation. So while we're waiting for Tommaso to get here or some callers to call in, either way, I'll just give you a quick Drew's view. A question that I'm getting asked frequently now, very frequently. I'd say I probably answered it three times this week for clients. It is, should I be paying and getting LifeLock? And so if you're not familiar with LifeLock, LifeLock is one of those services where you pay $10 a month or $20 a month or $30 a month. And depending on what level you're paying, depends upon what super duper service they're giving you to protect your identity. And the answer to the question is it really depends. It depends on what you're trying to accomplish and so forth. But what I do, and I've been doing this for about 8 years, is I do what's called a security freeze. Okay, so a security freeze is not with LifeLock. LifeLock is merely a monitoring service, a credit repair service, a insurance policy that if you get if you do end up in an identity theft situation, it costs you $5,000 or $10,000 to try to rectify some of the problems. Hiring attorneys or whatever the case may be, they'll reimburse you with this insurance policy that you've paid for out of your $10 or $20 or $30 a month. So it's more monitoring, it's more insurance, it's more, you know, advice as to what to do. So here's what a security freeze is. A security freeze is where you go to Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, and you say to them, I want you to freeze my entire credit bureau file. You cannot release information. You cannot allow somebody to enter this to see what my credit history is. And if somebody can't enter into the credit bureau's file under your name, 99% chance there's no ability to get credit under your name. So if somebody wants to get credit and use my identity, my address, my social security number, you know, and my name, et cetera, they would have to go to one of the credit bureaus and or whoever they're trying to get the credit with. Let's say they're going to a bank and the bank contacts Equifax and says, tell me everything about this Andrew Tignanelli and this social security number and this address. And Equifax would say, yeah, you know, wish I could, but there's a freeze on this account. Until it's thawed, nobody can get the information out of here. And so I have these PIN numbers. They're up to 12 digits long, I believe. And, you know, I use them anytime I want to thaw my credit report out. So I'll go to Equifax and, you know, let's say I'm buying a car. I'll go to Equifax and I'll say, thaw my credit report out for 1 week because I'm going to a dealership to buy a car. And when they come in to ask you for my credit records, you can give it to them for this 1 week period of time. So in essence, my credit file is vulnerable during that 1 week period of time. And the minute that week is up, close the, freeze the account again. So nobody can enter it again without the PIN number. And, you know, it costs $5 to do it in Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian, and it costs $5 to thaw it. So right now, it, you know, when I just freeze it, it costs me $15. And if I do it for my wife, it costs me $15 for her. So that's $30 fixed fee to freeze it. If I want to thaw it, if I thaw it just for myself and I just thaw it for one agency, that's $5. If I do it for all three, and for both of us, it's another $30. But still, even if I thaw and freeze two thaws and I froze it once, two thaws during the year, both of us, all three agents, I paid $90 for the whole year. I didn't pay the minimum with LifeLock of $120, and I actually have a more secure credit file. So credit freeze, and us Marylanders can go just do a Google search, security freeze, Attorney General State of Maryland. You'll get a Google page for Maryland Attorney General security freeze. Just click on that. It'll tell you exactly what I'm talking about. It'll give you the website link to each of the credit bureaus, and you will be able to do your own security freezes right online, pay your little $5 fee. You'll get a letter in the mail with a, you know, a umpteen number digit security PIN number, and your credit bureau cannot be accessed, your credit files cannot be accessed under your name without that credit bureau PIN number to get access into there. And that's one pretty strong way to prevent identity theft. Now, identity theft is when somebody takes my name, my social security number, my address, and gets a credit in my name. Now, somebody just taking my credit card number and using it, you know, that's not identity theft. That's just the credit card company losing money when a hacker uses my credit card. Anyway, I got to take a pause real quick. Remember, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and determine what direction we're going to go on tonight with Money, Riches, and Wealth. Right now, I'm going to go to traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. Drew Tignanelli here. We're on an open show. We can take, answer any question that you want on personal finances tonight because you get to direct the conversation. Last week we were talking about with Trey Kanipa about Japanese bonds and investments and macroeconomic policy. But tonight we're just taking all your questions. So you get to call in and ask 410-922-6680. 410-922-6680. I've got Linda online, but there's still two or three lines open up. If you're looking forward to asking a question, there are plenty of lines open. Right now, we'll go to Linda in Baltimore. Linda, how can we help you?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Drew Tignelli. Happy birthday to you. I did that walking up the steps. I know you said don't do it, but I did it this time last year.
Did you?
Well, I called exactly on your birthday.
There you go. Well, I really appreciate that. Frank told me this morning I should call Tom and he'd sing to me, but I think your rendition was far better.
I don't know. He probably sings better than I do.
I don't know about that, Linda.
Oh, thank you. You know, I don't know what I would do without you guys. I listen to you all the time. And I just want to tell you how much I appreciate.
No, well, we appreciate you listening, and hopefully our information is helpful to you, and that you get some good ideas and things that you can do.
Yeah, it's something I'm going to talk to you, but not on the air.
Right.
I'd rather call you at the office. But I wanted to wish you happy, happy, happy birthday. Many, many more. Stay healthy, wealthy, and wise.
All right. You take care,
thank
and thank you.
You
again.
Uh-huh.
Goodbye. So anyway, and I really appreciate Linda calling in. Yes, Friday is my birthday, July 31st, and we celebrate birthday month. I figure, you know, hey, if my birthday's on the last day of the month, then obviously the whole month was intended for me to celebrate. So that's why I do that. And, you know, so I appreciate Linda's call and wishing me a happy birthday. Anyway, we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. And nobody's online, I guess, even though it's my birthday. Nobody wants to ask any questions. And Tomasa is not even here to chitter-chatter with. So, you know, if you want to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680. And so we talked about, you know, I talked about identity theft first. And let me think. Is there another topic? Oh, well, here's a good topic, you know. So the Chinese stock market dropped by 8.5% on Monday. It's the largest drop since 2008 when the Chinese stock market dropped. Remember, Chinese stock market hit 6,200, I believe, in 2007 and went all the way back down to 1,700 in 2009. And then roared back up to like 3,200, tumbled all the way back down to 1,800, stayed there until 2014. So it tumbles, goes back to 3,200 in like 2010, early 2011, and it starts to tumble, and it goes all the way back down to 1,800 and stays there until sometime around 2014. And from there, around 2000 on the Chinese stock market, it takes off and it goes up 150% during that period of time. It goes from that 2000 up to about 4,200. That's a huge move in a stock market in one year, 1.5 years at the most. And then all of a sudden in May of this year or June of this year, it cracks. It goes down by 30%. And then the Chinese government comes out and, you know, says, oh, you know, we can't handle this. This is not good for the country. And the market goes back up 18%. And then it cracks again on Friday, goes down like 1% or 2%. But then on Monday, it goes down 8.5%. It goes down 2% on Tuesday. And today, it recovers by 3%. Who knows where it'll go next? But there is a problem in China with leverage in their markets. They borrow a lot of money when these markets are hot. People try to get rich quick, and they borrow a lot of money, and it brings dangers to their market. So you just have to be careful and understand how the Chinese stock market operates, but you also have to understand that they are using a lot of leverage in non-productive ways, and we're not sure exactly how that's going to come to roost at the end of their scenario if they don't get the assignment or the allocation of capital right in that country. Right now, allocation of capital is done in a very inefficient way. So anyway, be careful out there. We're going to see Ken in Ken on retirement. Ken, how can we help you?
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good, and you?
Not bad. I am like all over the board with retirement and stuff, and I don't know how to focus, I guess, more on getting a goal. I've worked for a large company, and I have like 1,300 shares of Exxon stock, which I just keep separate. But I also have an IRA and a Roth. And then I have another IRA with the current company I'm with. I put 6 in it, and they match 5.
Right.
So I owe approximately $82,000 on my house, and I have a line of credit that I owe approximately $84,000 on. So I have 2 months in savings, 2 months in checking, and then I have an additional $8,500 invested in stock.
Well, let me ask you a question, Ken. Have you ever gone to a fee-only financial advisor and gotten them to help you just put a plan together?
Well, I was with Edward Jones and...
No, I said a fee-only financial advisor. You can only find those through an organization called NAPFA, N-A-P-F-A, National Association personal financial advisors.
Uh-huh.
NAPFA. And you go to a fee-only advisor, they're not going to be worried about trying to sell you stocks or bonds or mutual funds or insurance policies. They're going to just give you solid, comprehensive advice as to how to get what you have together, put some goals and objectives together, and implement a plan. And, you know,
I guess the big question I have is, should I just pay off my home equity with the stock because the stock's like up and down all the time?
Well, you know, Exxon's
kind of money that I would be putting into. I have Apple and I have Halliburton. Apple's doing all right. Halliburton's tanked.
Well, you know, fossil fuel companies have their problems. There are too many politicians in the world that believe climate change is the greatest. This is what President Obama said. Climate change is the greatest problem our country faces in the future. Period. Carte blanche. He wants to destroy every fossil fuel company. He's starting with the coal companies. He's already bankrupt about four in the last 6 months. He's giddy over this. And so I'm sure Exxon and Chevron and them are not high on his list either. So you do have to keep that in mind. But you need a comprehensive plan. You can't just ask me, should I pay off my mortgage? You need to pull this together, look at what you have, understand it, understand what your goals are, understand what your investment strategy is going to be, and implement it. NAPFA.org is a great way to look for a fee-only advisor. The Garrett Financial Network is another way to look for a great fee-only financial advisor. And I think you'll do yourself a lot more favor than just try to, you know, get a quick answer on this. All right?
Okay. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy. We're going to go to Rob in Kingsville. How can we help you, Rob?
Hey, I have a question about China's economy.
Sure.
Would you still classify it as a, you know, your typical communist command economy? Because it's like a weird mix of, you know, command and capitalism.
Absolutely. I mean, it's in a lot of ways, I'm envious of their government. You know, I mean, there are a lot of people would say, oh, you know, it's communism and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, when you watch the two-party system work and as pitiful as it's getting here, you almost want a one-party system, you know? there is this weird mix of capitalism, free market enterprise, and dictatorial communistic party things, you know, and it's what causes the problems with them. But they realize if they just say, tomorrow we're a free market country and everybody's free, that it'll come with risk to them and the Communist Party. What they're trying to do is glide the country into free market capitalism, but keep their position as the one-party government.
Well, that's been my question, is how can you actually have a stock market in what is, you know, in any part a command economy?
Well,
now, how can you let
you gotta
companies
keep it
go public and expect them to actually thrive?
Well, there are a lot of companies that are truly public and truly independent in China and truly thrive. It's the state-owned companies you have to worry about.
Sure.
So those are the companies you have to worry about. But China has one of the most vibrant independent private company enterprises in the country. Baidu and Tencent and, you know, companies like that. These are completely Amazon.com, you know, type companies, manipulated companies. They have some of the greatest entrepreneurs in the world. The problem they have is they have these state-owned companies that are the Verizons and the Exxons of their country. So I got to hold. You got to hold with me if you want to ask more. I got to go to traffic right now. I'll be right back.
I got one last question.
Okay, you got to hold though. We got to go to traffic. We'll be right back.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're going to go right to our callers. We're going to go to Steve. Steve, how can we help you?
Drew, I'm just wondering, if I give you a ticker symbol, can you, will you render your thoughts a little bit about it? Not to buy it or sell it, but just kind of what you think of the general space?
Sure.
Are you okay with that? Okay. It's CURCX. It's an energy it invests in U.S. and Canadian royalty trust, energy exploration and production. So, you know, it's in a space that's seen a significant drop off as you know.
Well, it's a difficult area. We're looking at the MLP pipelines because it's a little different. You know, because the MLPs are pipelines, so as long as they're using natural gas and oil, you know, they're collecting money, you know, and they make a little more or a little less depending on what the price of oil is. But the actual producers of oil and gas, you know, it's going to be a difficult industry. That doesn't mean that if you get it the right price, that you're not going to make some good money for a short period of time. It's certainly not something you want to look at as a long-term investment, or that unless something weird happens in the world, you know, I don't think you should expect fossil fuels to go surging into the future anytime soon, because these governments are hell-bent on destroying the fossil fuel industry. They are absolutely convinced we are going into this enormous climate change thing, and they are going to save us because we are too stupid to figure it out ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm not saying, you know, again, if you get it at the right price, Steve, and that's what you have to try to figure out, you know, how cheap is cheap based on what you know is the government is trying to do and, you know, and so forth. You know, but you're going to see a lot of dividend cuts in a lot of these companies coming up in the future, a lot of the oil producers. Now, the pipeline companies, they're a little different. They probably might have not as fast an increase in cash flow if the prices stay lower. But I don't think you're going to see decreases in their payouts. And you could see a lot more merger and acquisition where the producers take their pipelines back over. So anyway, that's if you're going to look at something strictly from an income perspective, you might want to look at the MLPs, but don't buy them directly. Buy them through an ETF so you get rid of all that crazy tax things. But,
yeah,
you know, again, if you get it cheap enough, Tom, you know, it's always worth it. You
yeah.
know?
And, Steve, let's a little color on that. I mean, you're talking about the Mainstay Cushing Royalty Energy Income Fund?
Yeah, and there's a comparable CCCCX, which is more a midstream, not an upstream.
Yeah, so they you know, Mainstay, first of all, is a fund company that New York Life operates, and they bought, you know, the Cushing franchise there, you know, based on Cushing, Oklahoma, and you know, you've got the C shares, you know, so obviously you bought that through a broker or somebody like that, and that's how they get paid, through a C share kind of a class. But yeah, as Drew said, I mean, there are different opportunities, and you know, it's been a rough period, to say the least, you know, for, you know, that kind of a vehicle. I mean, down almost 60% in the last year. You know,
well, you know,
but
there
will be opportunities on the other side.
Sovereign countries don't care if they make money or not. So the OPEC-producing right. countries don't care if they sell oil for a profit or not. They just want the cash flow. Whereas private companies, they need profit. And if these OPEC countries, you know, and there's a theory out there that the Saudis thinking, you know, they're going to get rid of fossil fuels over the next 20 years. And if they do, let's pump while the sun's shining. Let's make hay while the sun's shining, as they say. All right, Steve, I got to run.
All right. Any ETF I can just review?
AMLP is a pipeline company. AMLP. All right?
Fabulous. Thank you, sir.
Dan in Baltimore, how can we help you?
Yes. I had two stocks in my portfolio, and one was bought out by another, and I got a combination of stock and cash. And do I have to pay that capital gain on the cash that I received in quarterly estimated taxes, or could I wait till I do my 2015 tax return?
Well, I don't know your actual tax situation, but if the only extra income you have is the cash from that gain, and you did your estimated tax payments based on the tax you owed in 2014, then you would be good to wait until April of 15. But now keep in mind, you may also owe taxes on the stock that you got unless they've told you carte blanche the stock is coming as a tax-free exchange.
Right, that's what I think. I just think it's an even exchange on the stock, but I have to pay the capital gains on the cash that
I receive. Well, then if you pay in estimated taxes based on the tax you owed in 2014, you may be good, and you probably are, to just wait and pay the rest on that gain in 2015. What's your income bracket? $20,000, $100,000,
$200,000? Well, it was around, I'd say, maximum $25,000.
Well, then your capital gains rate, Dan, is zero.
That cash, I received $60,000 cash on that.
And now what's your cost basis on the stock?
Let's see. Probably $23 a share.
And what did it get bought out at?
Let's see. I'll tell you. Let's see.
Do 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 do.
Dollars a share.
How much was that?
How much?
$40 a share.
How many shares 40. Did you have?
So he only got about a 40% gain on the $60,000 of cash that he got. So it's only about $25,000 taxable gain.
Mm-hmm.
Are you married or single, Dan?
Single. And also, is the long-term capital gains rate still 15%?
It is, but you know, a portion of yours is actually going to be tax-free. So you're not going to pay taxes. You're not going to pay a lot of taxes on that $25,000, $30,000 a gain that you made. I'm going to guess, this is just a guess, I'm going to guess that if you pay $2,000 in taxes on it, I'm going to be surprised. But that's just a rough guess off the top of my head. All right, buddy?
All right, thank you.
But don't forget Marilyn. They're going to want their money.
They get 7.5%.
They're going to take 7.5% no matter what. I'm going to Michael, my good friend Michael. Michael, how are you?
Yes, Drew. I just want to ask you if you're familiar with a person by the name of Jeff Berwick.
You know, the name's familiar. I don't know why.
Well, he's been talking about a collapse of the stock market as following in a pattern of Shemitah years. Are you familiar with the idea of Shemitah?
Yeah, I've heard of the concept, you know, and there are a lot of Christians that have a similar concept that they've been talking about for the last year or so.
Well, the last two crashes, 2008, 2001, followed right on the heels of the end of the Shemitah. And so he's predicting that that's going to happen again. For example, in 2001, just 6 days after 9/11, on September 17th, that was the day when the U.S. stock market reopened and had one of its biggest drops in history, falling 7%. In 2008, the final day of Shemitah was September 29, 2008. That day is infamous for having the third largest stock market collapse in U.S. history, falling 9% or 777 points.
Right.
And as he looked further back in history, he found other calamitous events that happened around those times. So he's predicting another one, and the Shemitah that is ending on September the 13th of this year.
Right. You know, I have to admit, though, if you go back every 7 years, 1994 was a tough year to a large degree. Not terrible, but then before that, 7 years before, it was 1987, the crash of 87. 7 years before that was 1980, and the markets took a big tumble and didn't recover until 1982. 7 years before that was 73, just before the collapse of 73, 74. So, yeah, you know, there is some possible precedence there, you know?
Well,
good point, Michael.
The good news is that for the Jewish people, it's predicted that by one of the biggest sages that we have these days, that Mashiach is going to come September, after the Shemitah is finished, September 12th, which is on the Sabbath, so it won't be that day that we'll be going out, but according to him, we'll be going out this coming end of Shemitah.
All right. Well, we'll see, won't we?
And the rest of the world will have a good end, not a bad end.
All right, Michael, thank you for that. Let's see if we can get to Frank before the end of the show. Frank.
How are you doing?
We only got 10 seconds.
Yeah, I have a question pertaining to a company by the name of Alliance. Enterprises are doing a fixed annuity for $100,000 and to mature in 17.5, which it will guarantee an income. I was trying to get your feel for what you think about the company, whether it's a good, reliable company to
okay, so can you hold on, and I'll answer your question as I get off the air, okay?
Sure.
You hold on, and she'll hold you, and I'll come back to you in a second. Anyway, Tommaso, next week?
Yep, we've...
We got a guest.
Yeah, we got Mr. Social Security, I believe.
Is it?
I think it's...
Mr. Social Security himself, and this is Drew Tignanelli wishing himself a happy birthday and saying God bless.